quickly go over what we didn't know now. Sorry. We said we have the Persian Empire, the great Persian Empire. Ahasuerus is our king. Haman is the great-great-grandson of Agog from Amalek. Our enemies from the time we left Mitzrayim. Amalek are those that attacked us, the first to attack us when we left Mitzrayim for no reason other than hatred of Am Yisrael and hatred of Hashem. And Mordechai and Haman had at one point been chief generals of each one of a different battalion, and when Haman ran out of food and he begged Mordechai for food, he ultimately sold himself as a slave to Mordechai and told him, now give me the food, I'll sign myself over as a slave. And either they wrote a contract, which Mordechai used to keep inside his shoe, or they actually carved out the contract on the bottom of Mordechai's shoe. Nonetheless, Haman signed himself over as Mordechai's slave. Haman was married to a great governor in a city that was nearby. His wife Zeresh was the daughter of someone who had strong political power, and Haman was tremendously wealthy, as we'll see today. Mordechai never took Haman as a slave. I don't know why. And Haman was going up in power. We see in the beginning of the story that Haman was the advisor who told Ahasuerus to have Vashti killed. Chazal tells that Haman had a daughter, and he was hoping that Ahasuerus would take his daughter as his wife, and this would help him move up in power. So Ahasuerus at this party where Vashti tells him, who are you? You cattle driver. What are you worth? You were the one who watched my father's horses. You're getting drunk. You're telling me to come out clothesless, come out naked before all your officers. Forget it. You drink a little bit of wine, you get drunk. My father could drink the amount 1,000 people could drink. He could drink wine like 1,000 people drink wine, and he wouldn't get drunk. And you look at you. After 7 days, you're drunk. And when she embarrassed him like that, they didn't know what to do. So ultimately, they tried to have her beheaded. This was the third year of Ahasuerus' reign, right? That's what we said last time. Now, Ahasuerus has Vashti killed, and Vashti is very beautiful. Vashti is what helped him get up to power. We had said that Vashti was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king. Now, even though the Persians had conquered the Babylonian Empire, but royal blood carried weight in those days. Now, Ahasuerus became sober, and he remembered Vashti and what she had done and the decree that they had made that they had killed her, and the lads that were serving him suggested to him, why don't you gather all the virgins that are beautiful and ask your governors of each city to gather the good looking girls to Shushan, the capital. That was a capital that the Persians instated, and bring them to Hege, who was castrated. You don't have to worry what he's going to do. Let him watch the women, and whatever girl is going to be good in your eyes, she's going to be ruler in place of Vashti. And Ahasuerus liked the idea, and they did that. They started gathering women, women that were married, women that weren't married, whoever was good looking could be taken forcibly to the king's house. Obviously, this was going to draw the resentment of the people against Ahasuerus, but he was powerful enough that that didn't scare him. The Megillah says, Perek Beis, Pasuk Hei, Ish Yehudi. There was a man who was a Yehudi. Yehudi means he believed in Yud Kei Vav Kei, the Jewish God. That's where the term Yehudi comes from. One who does not worship Avodah Zarah, one who does not worship foreign gods, is called Yehudi. So there was one man who was a Yehudi in the capital. His name was Mordechai. Mordechai had tried to go to Yerushalayim desperately to help rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. We had seen that when the second king of the Persian Empire, the first king was Daryavesh Hamadi, Darius from Mede, and he was king only for 1 year, and then his son-in-law Koresh took over, Cyrus, he's called in English textbooks, and in the time of Cyrus, the Persian king, the first Persian ruler over the Persian Empire, the Jews were given permission to start rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. And then their enemies sent letters back to Cyrus, and they said, the Jews are going to rebel against you if you let them do this, you better stop them. You know what they did when they had their empire in Yerushalayim? They rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. They were never faithful. You got to stop this. And Chazal tell us it was Haman. Haman, who had seen to it, he had gone personally to Yerushalayim 3 times to ensure that the building of the Beis HaMikdash would be stopped. And so Cyrus Koresh sent word, that's it, I'm repealing my permission, you have to stop building the Beis HaMikdash. Haman was appointed officer, as we'll see in the next perek. So he sent his 10 sons to ensure that the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be rebuilt. He's very intent on seeing that the Jews don't move forward in their serving of Hashem. This is the constant theme that we see with Amalek. Even though we do nothing against them, they have to make sure that we don't serve our God. We didn't do anything to Haman, at least not till after what he did to us. We didn't do anything to his 10 sons. But no, this is their intent. They have to stop us. Can't be that a people is going to serve their Creator in this land, in this world. So there was one man, Ish Yehudi. The Megillah identifies him as one man, and the term Ish in Tanakh represents a man of stature, a man who is God-fearing, a man who is exceptional. Now we're going to see, Ish could also be a man who is exceptionally bad. Haman is also called Ish. He was exceptionally bad. But Ish is a man who stands out. So Mordechai, when the Persians had taken over the Babylonian Empire, Mordechai had come to the capital together with many other Jews in a show of faith, in a show of being patriotic. They had come to the capital and lived there. Don't forget that when the Persians overtook the Babylonian Empire, they wiped it out. They killed men, women, and children. They didn't leave much of the Babylonian Empire, of Babel, of Babylon. And this one man's name was Mordechai. We discussed his lineage. And even though the Jews had been taken forcibly to exile, we discussed that there were two exiles. The first time that Nebuchadnezzar had conquered the Jewish people, he had taken their leaders out to exile, and he told them, I'll leave you here, just don't rebel against me. And then they rebelled against him, and then he had to come back and destroy Yerushalayim and take everyone into exile. But when Nebuchadnezzar had taken the leaders into exile, there were some exceptional leaders that he did not take by force. The Navi Yirmiyahu, for example, Jeremiah, was told, you don't have to come. And he had said, no, if my people are going, I'm going. And Mordechai was also an exception. Mordechai was told, you don't have to come. And Mordechai wanted to go with his people, so Mordechai had gone of his own free will, together with the Jewish people, into exile. Now Mordechai had adopted his cousin, his niece, Esther, that's also known as Hadassah. Hadassah literally means a rose. Hadass is not exactly a rose. Hadass, we have Hadassim in, Hadassim aren't roses, I'm sorry. Hadassim are what we have on Sukkot. I don't know what you call it in English. I think that's in Arava. No? I don't remember what it's called in English. So he adopted her. She was, says, the Pasuk says she was his cousin. The Medrash says she was his niece. She had no father and mother, as we discussed. And she was beautiful. Now the Medrash tells us she was the ripe old age of 75. She wasn't a young girl. Which makes us wonder why, when all the beautiful girls of the cities were gathered, she was taken in. But let's get a picture of where Ahasuerush was. We don't know exactly how old he was, but what we do know is that his reign lasted 14 years. So if this is occurring somewhere after the third year of his reign, we have 9 years left till he dies. Could be he died a young man, we don't know. But it could be that he was 85 when he became king, and a 75-year-old lady might have looked appealing to him. I don't know. Or maybe she was exceptionally good-looking, even at the age of 75. I don't know. But the Medrash says she was 75. That she was born still before the Jews were taken into exile. She was still born in Israel. She wasn't born in exile in Shushan. Don't forget, we were in exile 70 years now. Well, some of the Jewish people were in exile 70 years, some less than that, depending on if they were exiled in the first exile or the second one. We said that there were two stages. So she was taken to Haggai, this castrated official who was responsible for all the women, and she was taken into this house where she had the job of beautifying herself. They were given olive oil that was pressed from olives that were third ripe, and when olives reach a third of the way to being ripe, if we press them, then the oil that comes from them makes the skin soft and removes the hairs. So this is one of the things that she was given, to soak in that for a half a year to make sure that her skin was smooth and there was no hairs. And another 6 months like all the girls, this is what every girl went through. She was given different types of lotions and perfumes to soak in. And this is how all the girls came to the king. Now Mordechai told her, don't tell anyone what nation you're from. Don't tell anyone what family you're from. You're from a kingly family. You have royal blood in you. If you tell what family you're from, they might take you as a queen. And what's wrong if they take you as a queen? First of all, who wants that? And secondly, we're worried that if Ahasuerus gets upset at you, then just like he killed out Vashti, so he might kill you. And not only he'll kill you, don't forget, you're from a people that have been chased. And he might kill out the Jewish people. So don't tell him what nation you're from. If worse comes worse, you get killed. You don't want to get killed. You don't want to put us all in peril. Now, Mordechai thought to himself, Vashti got killed. Why? Because she came from a family with royal blood. So she felt she could speak to Ahasuerus disrespectfully. She didn't want to do what the king told her to do, right? He told her come, and she said no. Esther, if she's going to be queen, she has to know that she has to listen to the king. She can't come in feeling I'm entitled to this queenship because I'm from royal blood. So Mordechai said to himself, she better not come in thinking she's riding on a royal horse. She has to come in saying, without saying what family she's from, without saying what nation she's from. Now, being enclosed in a non-Jewish environment, Esther saw that she could very easily forget what days of the week it was and when Shabbos was. So she was given 7 girls to bring her everything she needs. And what she did was she gave them each one different names. The first girl she called Roke'ita, which means in Aramaic, heaven, because on the first day the heavens were created, and that way she'd remember that when that girl came to serve her, it was Sunday. The second girl she called Gnuneta, the third girl she called Nehorita. Nehorita means light, because on the third day the sun was created, the moon, so she said that way I'll remember, and each day of the week she gave a different name that represented what was created on that day, and that way she'd remember what days of the week it was and what day Shabbos was. The girl that was for Shabbos, she called her Rigoita, calmness. Shabbos is supposed to be a calm day. Now, she was very well liked. Haggai liked her a lot, and he made sure she got good treatment. Every day, Mordechai would walk before the gates of that house where all the women were kept, and he'd stand there praying that everything go well with Esther, and he wanted to know how she was doing. They quote in the name, I think, of the Gerer Rebbe, that the Gerer Rebbe says, why did Mordechai merit that the great redemption of Am Yisrael came through his hands? Because when his cousin, when his niece was taken into captivity, every day he showed up to the gates. We're going to see that this lasted for a while. We already see that it's going to take a year, because she has to immerse herself in different oils and perfumes. Every day, he never called in sick. Never said, she's okay. No, every day he walked before those gates to see how she's doing. So she might have been in captivity, but she still had her uncle or her cousin there right outside the gate keeping an eye on her. Now, when every girl, when it was her turn to go to the king, she could ask for whatever she wants, whatever music, gestures, whatever she wants would perform with her coming to the king. She would come in the evening and spend the night with the king, and in the morning they'd send her to a second house where she was watched, and that's it. She was kept for the king's liking. If he'll ever want her, he'll call her again. If not, she can never go out. Now imagine, what father would want his daughter to go and that's it? She's in captivity. She's under the king's domain. But they didn't have a choice. Chazal tell us, we learn that Ahasuerus, as foolish as he was, and as wicked as he was, he had derech eretz, because he was only with his wives or these women at night. He never called them to come in by day. And that shows us an element of derech eretz. And this also shows us an insight into Chazal, that Chazal, even when they tell us bad things about a person, that they're not blinded by it. If there's something we're supposed to learn from it, if there was something good about it, they tell us there was also something good about this person. And the same thing the other way. Even our greatest leaders, if they did something wrong, Chazal make a point of telling us they did this wrong and that wrong, and we have to learn from that also. So Chazal tells, we learned there Acheret Shema Hashverus, that he only had his women at night. He never was with them by day. Now the Navi tells us that Ahasuerus would call her by name, which indicates that he had a tremendous memory. He was able to be with a different woman every night, and if he wanted this girl again, he'd be able to know her name, so he must have had a very, very good memory. So when Esther's turn came, so she didn't really want to be taken by the king. So she didn't ask for anything. Whatever Haggai told her to take, she took, but that's it. And whoever saw her, she found favor in their eyes. Chazal say either she was Yerakrokis, she was green, or everyone thought, if she's not telling us what nation she's from, she must be from my nation. And whatever it was, everyone liked her. And Esther was taken forcibly to the king's house in the 10th month, that's the month of Teves, in the 7th year of his reign. So now 4 years have passed since Vashti has been killed. And during these 4 years, presumably, he's been having a different woman every night. And after 4 years of having woman after woman, Esther is taken in. Chazal tell us that it was the month of Teves, that's the month of the winter, and that's the month when a person is ordinarily cold, and he enjoys having another person with him more than in the summer months. And Hashem did this, all kinds of little things to help that Esther would be chosen. And Esther really found favor in his eyes, more than all the married women and non-married women, and he gave her the crown, and he appointed her as queen instead of Vashti. He removed the picture of Vashti that he had over his bed, and instead he put a picture of Esther. I don't know if it means they had someone draw a portrait of Esther, or they had an idol made of Esther, I don't know exactly, but that's some kind of picture of Esther placed over his bed, which shouldn't sound so unusual, because we discussed that the same thing was true in the reverse. When David went to war, so Michal used to have either an idol or a picture of David in her room to remind her of David. And according to some Shatim, she had an idol that had the exact shape of David in her room. So, oh, what?
Sculpture,
right. Right. Not an idol, sculpture, right. Thank you. So, Ahasuerus takes her as a wife, and she's not telling him what nation she's from. And she tries to ask, he tries to ask her, and she doesn't answer. So he tries to encourage her, makes a big party. He says, this is the party of Esther. He gives a reduction in taxes to all the cities, and he's trying to tell her, Esther, you know, if I'll know what people you're from, I'll be nicer to them, I'll free them from taxes. And she's not listening. And then he turns to his advisor, Mordechai, and he says, what am I going to do? How am I going to get her to tell me? So Mordechai tells him, look, there's nothing that a woman is more jealous, more envious of than another woman. So if you want her to think that she has to tell you, what you have to do is start another pageant, as though you're taking in more women, and that'll get her jealous, and then maybe she'll tell you. So they started another pageant, and again, Esther wouldn't tell the king. The king would sit in front of Esther, and he'd ask her, what nation are you from? And on his right side is sitting Mordechai. Mordechai would signal her, nope, don't do it. At the same time, he's advising Ahasuerus to get her to say it. He's sitting behind Ahasuerus and signaling her, don't say it. And he's constantly threatening her not to say it because she was under immense pressure. She doesn't know what the king's going to do to her. And he helped her. Whatever he told her, she kept. She'd send her shaylos to Mordechai. She still kept Shabbos and Yom Tiv. She kept the laws of Nida. She made sure not to drink from the wine that guy in touch. We know that if a guy pours wine, we have to wonder if he had intention of libation before an idol. So we're not allowed to drink wine that a non-Jew touches, unless it's cooked wine, because non-Jews don't use cooked wine for libation before their God. So she kept all the mitzvot because she had Mordechai there, and she constantly got advice from him. Esther needed to make sure that Mordechai was nearby, so she established by the gates, entrance to the king's quarters, she established a Sanhedrin, and she had Mordechai give shiurim there. Kids came, and that's where Mordechai Sanhedrin was, by the gates of the king's palace. Now, Mordechai was there, and now Perek Beis ends with a seemingly innocent story. There were two officers, two servants of the king, Bigson and Seresh. There were two guards, and they wanted to kill the king. And Mordechai found out. He told Esther. Esther told the king in the name of Mordechai. They checked it out, and they were both hung and it was written down in the king's diary, in the king's history book. Chazal tell us that these two officers were upset. They saw that Esther is giving Mordechai preferential treatment. And they said, boy, if she likes Mordechai that much, she's going to remove us from our post and put Mordechai instead. So they wanted to kill Esther, and they said, we'll give Esther a drink of poison, we'll put poison in her wine, and we'll kill the king. And they checked the wine, and they found that the wine had poison, and then they killed them. Another Midrash says that they said from the day he got this girl in, he loves her so much, he's constantly with her, and he's thirsty as a result of that. We don't get a minute's rest. Constantly he's calling us to bring me this drink, bring me that drink. And they said, we can't have this, we gotta get rid of him. Chazal tell us, how did Mordechai find out? Because they were from a distant nation, Tarshim, Chazal tells. Maybe that's Tarsus, I don't know. And they thought they could speak in front of him the language of the nation they came from, and he wouldn't understand. What does he know? But they didn't know that he sat on the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin is responsible to know all 70 languages. In order for someone to sit in the Sanhedrin, he has to be able to hear testimony. And the halacha says that when we hear testimony, we have to understand what the witnesses are telling us. We can't hear testimony through a translator. So Mordechai understood all 70 languages. So he was sitting there, and they're speaking to one another in their language about their plans to execute the king, and they're assuming he can't understand, and he did. And he told Esther. And here we see a tremendously important thing. Esther could have taken the credit for herself. Esther could have come and told the king, hey, I know about this plot, and she might have gained points with the king. And Esther didn't do that. Esther told the king in the name of Mordechai, and we're going to see that that small detail that Esther remembered to tell the king in the name of Mordechai is what's going to end up saving Am Yisrael. And from there, Chazal learned out that Kol Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, if a person quotes something in the name of the person who said it, maybe Gudol Olam, he causes redemption to come to the world. The redemption of the Jewish people from the hands of Ahasuerus and Haman were a result of this small story. The way we see it, obviously Hashem could have redeemed us anyway, but the way the story unfolded, it was as a result of this. Now the king, after this happened, let's recall, this is in the 7th year of his reign, and sometime afterwards, we don't know exactly when, the king took Haman, that Haman that hated Haman, and he raised his post, he made him the chief officer, all the other officers were subservient to Haman. And everyone had to bow to Haman by the king's decree. Chazal tells, what does it mean after this story? Hashem always prepares the refuah lifnei amata. Hashem prepares the medicine before he hits us. Before we were going to be punished with the decree that we're going to be wiped out, Hashem prepared the annulment of the decree. Esther was in place. Mordechai had told the king, and that was written in the diary. Everything was in place for our redemption to come to be. So Hashem set up everything. Everything's ready for the Yeshua. Everything's prepared that we should be saved. Now we're ready to be punished. Now when this story happened exactly is unclear, but we're going to see as the story continues to unfold that most of the story of Purim took place in the 12th year of the king Ahasuerus, and we have to wonder what happened during those 5 years. Maybe this is happening 5 years later. Esther's been queen already 5 years. So everyone's bowing down to Haman, and Mordechai won't bow down. He says, that's my slave, I'm going to bow to him. I'm not bowing down to him. And Chazal, we discussed what Chazal said. Some explain that when Ahasuerus saw that Esther isn't giving in, she's not telling him what nation she's from, so he said, okay, I'll show her my affection by taking the person who got her to the post, by taking Haman, who got her up here, and he's the one that advised me to kill Vashti, and I'll give him honor. I'll make him my chief officer. So everyone's bowed down to Haman, and Haman takes advantage of the situation, and he puts an avodah zarah, he draws an avodah zarah on the front of his garments and on the back of his garments so that all the Jews that bow to him end up bowing to avodah zarah, and Mordechai says, I'm not going to bow. Now, up in heavens there was a great ruckus. The angels came up and they said, what's going on here? The midas hadin, the midah of justice came before the Creator and said, this is Haman, who took out of his time and went all the way down from Shushan, traveled down to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, to ensure that the Beis HaMikdash won't be rebuilt. And now he's going to be chief officer. You're letting him get this high post. And Hashem said, wait, I want the whole world to know about this Haman before I destroy him. Wait, let him grow, let him get higher and higher up, and the greater they come, the harder they fall, as they say. So Hashem said, let him become famous, and then I'll avenge his wickedness and the wickedness of his forefathers. So the officers came to Mordechai, the Midrash says, and they told him, why aren't you bowing down? So Mordechai said, I'm a Jew. So the officer said, what do you mean? Your great-great-grandfather, Yaakov, didn't he bow down to Esav when he met him? He held Esav in higher esteem, not in higher esteem, but Esav was a chief officer. Esav was in a position of power. So Yaakov bowed down to him. Mordechai told him, nope, you got it all wrong. Yaakov might have bowed down, and the 11 tribes might have bowed down, but my great-great-grandfather, his name was Binyamin. He was Yaakov's youngest son. He wasn't born yet. And you know what? My great-great-grandfather, he didn't bow down to Esav, and as a result of the fact that he did not bow down to Esav, that's why the Beis HaMikdash was able to be built in his portion. The Beis HaMikdash was built in Binyamin's portion, and all the nations came to my family's portion, to the Beis HaMikdash, to bow down before the Creator. And that's a result of the fact that my family would not bow down. That's where I come from, and I'm not bowing. And we're going to see that people were upset at him for this, the Jewish people as well. So everyone asked him, why aren't you doing it? And he wouldn't listen. So they told Haman, they wanted to see. The other officers wanted to see if Mordechai is going to stand up to his word. Mordechai says, I'm a Yehudi. I'm a God-fearing person. I worship only one God. I'm not bowing down to his idols. And Haman saw that Mordechai isn't bowing down to him. And Haman knew the secret behind him, that Mordechai is always extending his right foot where the shtar, where the contract that Haman sold himself as a slave is. And Haman got upset. And Haman thought, it's not enough that I avenge my anger from Mordechai. Mordechai says he's a Yehudi, he's from these Jewish people, so I have to wipe out all the Jewish people in the kingdom of Ahasuerus. In the month of Nisan, that's the month when the Jews were redeemed, that's our first month, that's the month where Pesach is, the 12th year of Ahasuerus' rule, he drew lots to figure out what month he's going to take revenge from the Jewish people. And the Midrash says he went one month after another, and every month in the heavens they said, don't let it fall on that month. On that month, the first month, Nisan, the Jews were redeemed, it's Pesach. The second month, each month had another claim why it shouldn't be that month. Until he came to the month of Adar, the Midrash says he said, Adar is great. That's when their leader Moshe died, and he didn't know that was also when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. The Tzaddikim are born and dying the same day. He didn't know that. So Haman came to Ahasuerus and he said, we've got to wipe out these people. These people, don't worry, it won't harm your kingdom. They're dispersed. You won't have any bald spots. There won't be any part of your kingdom that's empty because they're dispersed. And they're weird. They always have excuses. They say, today's Shabbos, I can't work. Today's Yom Tov, I can't work. Today's Pesach, I can't work. Today's Sukkot, I can't work. They have excuses. Always, they're not showing up to serve the king. And the Midrash says, he said, they curse you whenever they can. Whenever they have days that they gather, what do you think they do? They're cursing you. You have no benefit by leaving them around. If it's okay with you, I'm going to write a decree that they should be wiped out. And you know what? You're going to gain. I'll give you 10,000 silver loaves. And I'll bring it over to your treasuries. You're going to gain wealth out of this. And Ahasuerus, Chazal tell us, and Haman were like a person that has a pit in his field and the other person has a pile of dirt in his field. So the guy who has the pile of dirt tells the other guy, how much do you want? The guy who has the pit says, how much do you want for that dirt? And the other guy says, what do you mean? I don't need money for that. Get it out of my field. You take it and I'll be happy and you'll be happy. You'll fill your hole and I'll get rid of the dirt. Same thing Ahasuerus told Haman. I don't need your money. Yeah, here's the ring, the signet ring. You can sign out the decree to kill out the Jewish people. Now, the Megillah doesn't say that clearly. We're going to see that Megillah Esther was really written under Ahasuerus' rule. At the end of the story, Mordechai writes this Megillah and sends it out to the Jewish people. But don't forget that when Mordechai is writing this, Ahasuerus is still king. So a lot of the things that Mordechai might have wanted to say about this wonderful king, I'm saying wonderful sarcastically, he couldn't say openly. So a lot of the things are hinted in the Megillah, because the Megillah was written in a foreign land under the king who we really have to say the truth about. So it's hinted. So the king tells Haman, keep your money, do the with the nation whatever is good in your eyes. And on the 13th day of Nisan, Pesach is coming up, they write Haman's decree and they send it out to all the different people. Remember Ahasuerus was ruler over many, many different lands and many different nations. And they sent it out in many languages, each nation according to its language, signed with the king's signet ring, saying that the Jews, young and old, women and children, on the 13th day of the month of Adar, almost a full year from then, remember this is happening on the 13th of Nisan, 11 months from then, the 13th of Adar, the decree is that all the Jews are going to be wiped out. You take all their wealth, wipe out their homes, take whatever you want. Now, the first city that the decree came out was Shushan, because that's the capital. So the messengers were rushed out. The city of Shushan, right away the decree got heard. Haman and the king sat down to drink, and the city of Shushan, there was a ruckus. The goyim started singing. They were happy. Now they're going to get wealthy easily. They're going to wipe out the Jews. And the Jews started crying. Mordechai knew what was going on. And Eliyahu Hanavi showed up. The Malach Eliyahu showed up to Mordechai and he tells him, you know what? In heaven they agreed to the decree. There's a decree up in heaven that the Jews really are going to be wiped out. You got to get to work. The Jews have to start davening. It's not just down here. And Mordechai started crying and started davening. He tore his clothes. He wore sackcloth. And he went out into the city streets and started wailing. He came to the king's gate. He couldn't come closer because the way he was dressed. All the cities, as the messengers keep going and giving word in the cities, the Jews started fasting. Tzom doesn't literally mean a fast. Tzom comes from the word Tzom es Hagidin. Tzom means they gathered together to pray and cry. They wore ashen sackcloth. And Esther is up in the king's palace. Her maidservants come to her and they tell her, Mordechai's out there in sackcloth. And Esther got so scared that she had her period unexpectedly. She sent clothing to Mordechai. She says, get him dressed, what's wrong? And Mordechai refuses. So Esther sends word to Mordechai and she asks him, what's going on? So Mordechai refuses to change his clothing. So Esther calls her most loyal servant, Hasoch, which Chazal say was really Daniel. Daniel was the chief advisor who Ahasuerus would take counsel with before he would rule on things. And she calls Daniel, the Jewish advisor, and she tells him, go out and tell Mordechai what's going on. Why is he crying? Why isn't he willing to accept my clothing? Mordechai goes out to speak, Daniel goes out to Mordechai, and he tells Mordechai, Mordechai tells him what's going on. Mordechai tells him how Ahasuerus wasn't even interested in the money. Ahasuerus wants to kill us as badly as Haman does. And he tells him that up in heavens also there's been a decree, we're in trouble. And tell Esther that she has to figure out how to get this decree annulled. Tell her she has to go to the king and ask him to have pity on her nation. So Asach comes to Esther and he tells her what Mordechai says. And Esther tells Asach, go tell Mordechai that he shouldn't pick a fight with Haman, because you should know that Haman hates him not only because he's Mordechai, but Haman hates him because he comes from Yaakov and Haman comes from Esau. And Esther tells Asach, go tell Mordechai that Haman advised Ahasuerus to put out a decree that anyone who comes to the king uninvited, to the king's quarters, gets killed unless the king decides to have pity and extend his scepter. and the king hasn't seen me in 30 days now. Daniel starts making his way to Mordechai, and Haman sees this. Haman sees that Daniel is being sent by Esther. So Haman got upset, and he went out and killed Daniel. And here Daniel ends his life, according to one Medrash. Rashi and Daniel has two pshat in when Daniel actually died. But according to this Medrash, so Daniel ended his life right here. Daniel was killed by Haman. So the Medrash says that the two Malachim, Michal and Gavriel, they fulfilled the message. They came to Mordechai, and they told him Esther's message. So Mordechai told these two angels, Gavriel and Michal, go tell Esther that if you think that you're going to get away in the king's palace, that while we're all in trouble, you're up there, you're going to be okay, you're mistaken. If you're silent now, and you don't go and ask for the Jewish people, then you should know we're going to be saved. Hashem's not going to let us be wiped out. We're going to be saved because we have merits from our forefathers. But you and your father's house are ultimately going to be wiped out. And who knows, you think you're going to wait? Who knows if you're going to be queen so long? Look at how quickly Vashti was out. How long had she been queen by now? She's been queen for 5 years. Mordechai tells her you can't wait to see if maybe the king will invite you because you don't know how long you're going to be up there. So Esther sends word to Mordechai. She tells him, gather the Jews that are in Shushan, and I want you to fast for 3 days, night and day. And me and my girls, we're also going to fast, and that's how I'm going to come to the king, even though this is against the Jewish religion because Pesach was coming up. Remember, we're holding the 13th day of Nisan. We have the 13th, the 14th, the 15th. We're entering Pesach. And she says, regardless of the fact that it's Pesach, if you want me to go in to the king, then you all have to fast. And Mordechai accepts what she says, and he sends out word throughout Shushan, we're all fasting. On the third day, Ruach HaKodesh lands on Esther. She starts proceeding to the king's inner quarters. That third day was Pesach. That third day, she stood outside the king's inner quarters and turned her face to the Beis HaMikdash, and she started davening. And she davened to Hashem that she doesn't fall in a Haman's plot and get killed, and that Haman, who had Vashti killed, won't see to it that she gets killed, and that the king will accept what she says and have pity on the Jewish people. She walks into the king's inner quarters, and the king was sitting on his throne. He sees her crying. He sees the tears going down her eyes and her eyes up to heaven. And when he sees that, he automatically, she finds favor in his eyes, and he extends his gold scepter, and she comes forward and touches that scepter, and the king asks her, what do you want, Esther, my queen? And what do you want? Up to half the kingdom I'll give you. Chazal said, it wasn't even up to half the kingdom. He was saying, anything you ask me, I'll give you, even half the kingdom. But if you ask me to rebuild that Beis HaMikdash, I'm not doing it. I promised I won't do it. Notice again, we started last time with the importance of the Beis HaMikdash. He doesn't know she's Jewish, no. But he's saying, whatever you want, I'll give you, but don't ask me that. When he's giving her a promise, he's saying, I'll give you everything you want, but not that. Even though he didn't know she was Jewish. So Esther asks him, I want the king and Haman to come.
Doesn't he kind of think, though, because Mordechai brought him there? Or brought her there?
No, Haman did.
Well,
Mordechai brought Esther in the beginning, so...
Well, that he doesn't know. That his officers took care of gathering the girls. He doesn't know where a girl came from. But the Jews, they thought they had it in with Esther, so they weren't so worried. So they're fasting day after day, but they think, oh, we have the queens on our side. And now Esther sees that, she says, that's not good. So she invites the king and Haman to a party that night. And when the Jewish people hear this, they go into the shuls and they say, Rabbi Shalom, what's going to happen? Even our queen's turned against us. She wants to get in with Haman. What a political scene is this? She's up there. She's Jewish. She knows she's Jewish, but she thinks that if she gets it in with Haman, then she'll be okay. She's turned against us. And now the Jewish people were finished. They walked into shul now, and now they really started davening. And that was one of Esther's thoughts. She said, the Jews can't think they have it in up here. They can't think they have the queen on their side. Now, why did Esther invite Haman? Ordinarily, when you go out on a date with your husband, you don't invite a third party. So that was part of Esther's ploy. She wanted Achshverosh to start thinking, hey, my wife wants to have a romantic dinner with me. What's Haman doing here? Maybe she likes Haman. Maybe she wants him at this dinner too. So the king says, okay, Rosh Haman, and they come to the party with Esther. And the king asks her, what do you want? Why'd you make this party? Whatever you want, up to half the kingdom, except for the Beis HaMikdash, I'll give you. And Esther says, if I find favor in the king's eyes, let the king and Haman come to the party I'll make tomorrow. Notice tomorrow. Whenever we fight Amalek, so is tomorrow. When our first fight was with Amalek, we said Machar. The Jewish strength is always in the fact that they have the strength to wait till tomorrow. Amalek wants to see things done today. We wait, we'll say, let's see what tomorrow. Let's see if you really last through tomorrow. The Olach Ruach, the fact that we have the perseverance, that's what's held us throughout all the generations. Haman leaves the king's quarters and he's really happy with himself. This is part of the Venapohu. Haman thinks he's being invited for his own good. Haman thinks, boy, even the queen loves me. She invites me to a date with her husband. And when he sees Mordechai sitting there with all the Jewish kids learning, and Mordechai, as usual, extends his right foot and won't bow to him, Haman gets exceptionally upset. Here I am, I'm riding on top of the world, and I have to see this Mordechai here, the king's gates. And Haman contains himself. He comes home and he gathers all his children and the people who love him, and Zeresh, his royal wife. And Haman tells them how amazing he is, tells them how many great sons he has, how his sons have official posts, and how the king made him greater than all the other officers. And he says, look, Esther chose no one else other than me to bring with the king to her party. And even tomorrow she's calling me to the party. Oh, so that's the next step. Well, Mordechai is probably higher up than Daniel. Daniel was
the official advisor to the king, he said.
So that's a good question. That's what Rashi brings over here. That's what the Targum says here. Could be he lost it when he killed Daniel and he thought he could get away with it, but Mordechai was a more central figure. And it could be also, there's another shot that says that Daniel was called Hasoch because he was Nechtach Mimalchuso. Hasoch means he was cut down from his high post. And maybe that's why he was serving under the queen as her messenger boy, even though in all the previous king's cabinets he was a high officer. Maybe that's why he was not in this low post. But it's a good question. I don't know. These are possible answers. But I don't have a source. The only source is that Rashi and Daniel that says that Hasoch might mean Shenechtach Mimalchuso. And how much time do we have? I don't have my watch with me.
I think we're actually very late.
What's the time?
It's 7:40.
I'm sorry. Oh.